That's funny.
Call to order this meeting of the Senate Tax Committee, April 23rd, 2013. We will be discussing, as part of Senate File 552, the elements of the tax reform division's work, but we're not going to be taking that up separately. But it's there so that you'll know that it is, most of it at least, is part of the Senate File 552, which the committee will be presented with now. So, Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And we are here with the Senate Tax Omnibus Bill this morning. I do want to say that when I woke up this morning, I was so excited I almost smiled.
Don't go overboard here.
Madam Chair and members, this is the bill that is before us to balance the state budget. It's the bill that's going to fund the investments that divisions have been making this year, and looking forward to the work with the committee on it. There are four main components to the bill. There's the revenue component. As you mentioned earlier, the reform work that the division did this year is going to be some discussion, hopefully, in the next couple of days. There is property tax relief in the tax bill this year, and a significant part of the Senate tax bill is the economic development projects that are included in this bill. These are investments that hopefully we're able to accomplish that will pay the state back over time. So let me start with a brief overview of these four components, and then we'll turn it over to Ms. Pollack to walk through the bill, if that's okay, Madam Chair.
Absolutely. And Senator Skoy had indicated earlier to me that is going to be the major activity today. Tomorrow we will take amendments on the bill, and following that, testimony. And since it's new today, probably won't have testimony today. Is that agreeable, Senator Skoy?
That sounds real good, Madam Chair.
Okay. So, we'll hear now the summary from Senator Skoy, and then we'll walk through the bill and with Ms. Pollack, and what she's going to be doing in particular is pointing out where there are differences with regard to the Reform Division's work, where there are differences here in the presentation of the omnibus. Senator Skoy.
Sure, and Madam Chair, Ms. Pollack just pointed out to me that Mr. Paulson and Ms. McQuay will take certain articles in the tax bill, and
sure,
she will deal with other ones. So it'll be a team effort in the Senate
Fine.
Tax staff here.
So you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, the revenue that the revenue proposals that the Senate has in its tax bill are focusing around trying to be consistent with the philosophy that the Senate has had as we work through the Reform Division of having a little lower rate and a little broader base. Our income tax proposal is to raise the third tier to 9.4%. That affects about 6% of Minnesotans directly. When you include the marriage credit interaction, it comes closer to 7%. It's about $165,000 of W-2 income for a married filing joint. Another component of revenue is the Senate is planning on eliminating the inflator on the statewide business property tax. We know that there's been some discussion about that in the past. As we look back over the history of that, some years the market value for that class of property goes up, some years it goes down. It was a little uncertain as where we should start, so we decided to start the rate back at the 2002 rate. As in the reform division, we are increasing the cigarette tax to 94 cents. We are including little cigars in the definition of cigarettes. And other tobacco products are going to have about a 20% increase. Moving on to the property tax relief. Really, the effort here is primarily about lowering levies and reducing costs for local governments. The Senate Tax Committee is taking Senator Reinhart's effort with regard to the LGA formula redo. The city groups have worked well together to come up with a formula that we think is much better if it's fully funded and will serve the state well as we go forward. The only change that the Senate is making from the group's proposal is that we have removed the adjustment for inflation. We are proposing $40 million in county program aid and no changes to the formula. It appears like the county program aid formula is working well. And in recognition that all our units of government are providing services to Minnesota residents, and these services are a partnership with the state, we think that we should include the townships. So we are proposing $5 million of township aid on a formula based on the percentage of ag land in the township, and we can walk through that in more detail if you choose. We also are proposing that we take another run at reducing school levies. Did you know the K-12 bill was in this committee, I guess last week now, and the K-12 committee does propose to reduce or eliminate four of the current school levies. They didn't quite have enough money to accomplish all four of those, so they did institute a very small new general education levy. The Senate tax bill is going to include the proposal that we heard earlier this year to buy off the bottom $300 of the voter-approved referendum. Was one of the governor's task force on education's recommendation. We think it's would be a good effort to do. We are also going to equalize this at not quite twice the equalizing level that it currently is at. And we also are proposing to adopt the governor's recommendations with regard to the renter's credit. With regard to cost reductions for local units of government, we are proposing to eliminate the sales tax for cities and counties. Currently, it's eliminated for townships. We think that eliminating this process where cities and counties collect property tax and then remit it to the state in the form of sales tax is cumbersome and duplicative and should be eliminated. So we're trying to attack property tax at its source by reducing levies and reducing costs. The economic development component of the tax bill, we're really trying to do a couple of things, but mostly we are trying to invest in the state with the understanding that these investments will pay us back over a period of time. As we propose to make these aids and credit changes that affect the entire state, we think that we need to use state dollars in these investments and therefore pay the state back. The economic development is focused at improving our communities, our businesses, our entrepreneurs, and our people to bring job creation to Minnesota. First, the communities. Besides the aids and credits, we are planning on investing in the host community of our state's largest employer, Rochester. We are investing in Rochester's infrastructure so the city can continue to grow as fast as as our state's largest employer does. Rochester needs to keep up with Mayo's growth. We think that this is a wise use of state resources. We think that the health, the medical care that's provided in Rochester is very valuable to the state. And we think that with this very reasoned approach that we've been working on this session that protects the Minnesota taxpayer, Rochester and Mayo and the state will continue to grow, and we're excited about that. There is another proposal in Maplewood, 3M, Research and Development Lab. We're proposing to provide that facility a sales tax exemption on construction materials. There's a facility in Brooklyn Park, a pharmaceutical company. We're proposing to give them a construction material exemption also. There's an industrial measurement company in Shakopee. We think they should qualify for the same thing. And really, the policy change here from previous years is that the state is playing a role in these economic development projects as opposed to just the local communities or taking a portion of fiscal disparities or some other regional effort. We think the state should be playing a role in this. The other thing that we are doing in the reform division, and I think Senator Est will talk about this, is we are eliminating the cumbersome sales tax process that they have to apply for their capital equipment exemption. We're proposing to make that an upfront exemption. Investing in entrepreneurs and the people of the state, we're continuing the angel investor credit and expanding that. We're continuing our investment in the historic building credit. We're proposing a Greater Minnesota Business Expansion Credit that'll give rural Minnesota businesses a capped sales tax exemption and a capped jobs credit. In the corporate income tax area reform that is in the division report that we will be talking about, the R&D research credit is strengthened. We're including a component to encourage data centers to locate in our state. We think we have some climatic advantages and that we're a cooler place, and the heat that they generate, we tend to have lower energy costs. We think it's good to work toward bringing those facilities to the state. We're proposing that Greater Minnesota Internship Program, so students in rural Minnesota will have an opportunity to be internship in local businesses. And we're including a couple of provisions dealing with the rural dentistry, MA subtraction for dental providers, and then some support for a critical access dental clinic. Additionally, we're planning on doubling the past military service credit and increasing the combat zone upfront exemption to $200 upfront credit. And lastly, we have a sports memorabilia tax in here. We think that 5% of that ought to go to youth sports activities in the state. Modeling that on the Hennepin County.
Twins.
Hennepin County provision. I'm going to briefly touch on some of the reforms that Senator Rest and the division worked on. Philosophy was to really modernize our tax system around the way our economy is operating, and also broaden the base and lower the rate. In the corporate area, we're lowering the rate by closing loopholes. We're lowering the rate to 9%, getting Minnesota to the lowest rates it's had since the 50s. Sales tax, we're also broadening the base, lowering the rate. This matches the purchasing patterns of Minnesotans. We will include the Nexus provision in here and a number of other sales tax expansions. This is also the sales tax reform area where the sales tax exemption for cities and counties, the dollars come from, and where the dollars come from to give the businesses their upfront capital equipment exemption. As I've already mentioned, we're doing the LGA formula redo. We're adding little cigars to the definition of cigarettes so that these are not marketed to the children of the state. I'm proposing a redo of the Ag Homestead Credit, one of the most cumbersome processes we have in our classification system. And as we presented to the committee earlier this year, it's a major streamlining of that and requiring farmers to actually live on the farm in order to qualify for the homestead credit. And in conclusion, Madam Chair, when this provision becomes law, we will accomplish the main goal of this session, and that's to balance the budget for the next 4 years. Additionally, we will have reformed the sales and corporate code by broadening the base and lowering the rates, major economic development projects, and we will have strengthened our partnerships with local governments and lowered their costs. Madam Chair, I'll stand for questions.
Senator Skoy, we'll stand for questions, but I think that we could do that in the context of going through each of the articles. So we'll have the staff do that, and then Senator Skoy can comment or be part of answering questions that are more than technical. Is that agreeable?
Yes, and Madam Chair, I think Mr. Paulson will be doing the first two aids and credits. Do you have this list?
Yes, I have the list. So we'll start with Article 1 in the delete everything of Senate File 52, aids and credits. Mr. Paulson, if you would start taking us through that.
Madam Chair and members, Article 1 is the aids and credits article. Section 1 is was brought to the committee by Senator Pappas in Senate File 935. It provides for aids for police and fire pensions. It appropriates $2.3 million for fiscal year 2015 and $23 million in fiscal years 2016. Through 2020 or until the 90% of the value of the plan equals 90% of the accrued liabilities.
Mr. Paulson, if you can, if there is a I don't know if you have the spreadsheet in front of you, but if there is a line on the spreadsheet that as we go through that references the various sections, I think that would be helpful to members too, or we could ask Ms. McQuaid to just chime in with where it is on the spreadsheet, if it is.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Skoy.
I don't know if it was mentioned or not, but the summary sheet will be available for tomorrow's committee hearing.
Right. So is this a line on the spreadsheet, Ms. McQuaid?
Madam Chair and members, the line of the, you can find pensions on page 5, line 274. Okay. And that is the aids and credits section. There are some possible ones later in the spreadsheet that have a no cost, but for the most part will be on this page for this article.
Okay, so page 5 is where you can see the impacts of aids and credits. Okay, Mr. Paulson. We won't do it line by line, but members and the public can look to that page on the spreadsheet to get the impacts. Mr. Paulson.
Madam Chair, then sections 2 through 7 and 9 through 12 are the local government aid reform from the property tax reform, or the tax reform division report. It was brought to the committee by Senator Reinert in Senate File 1491. Then moving down to Section 8, Madam Chair, Senator Skoy referenced the township aid. This is a provision that was not in the division report. It has been in the Senate Tax Committee, however, before it was in the 2008 omnibus tax bill, Senate File 2869. Basically for each township, it's based on the agricultural property factor, the area of the township and its population. The aid is limited to $5 million. Sections 9 through 11, again, are related to the LGA formula. And Section 12 is the LGA formula. It increases the appropriation by $80 million. As Senator Skoy mentioned, there is no inflation on that number. Section 13, Madam Chair, is county program aid. As was mentioned, it came from governor's recommendation. It uses the current law formula, increased by $40 million.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Was there a CPA provision in the reform division?
Was there a what?
Bill? There was not a CPA provision in the reform division bill, so this would be the first time we've seen this $40 million.
No, we saw it in Senator Reinert's bill, But the we didn't carry it in the reform division because all it was doing was adding dollars. It was not changing any formulas, so that's why it wasn't there.
Thank you.
And, you know, that was not a principle that was, you know, we weren't totally pure on that with other things, but we thought that was an improper place to put the county program aid. Mr. Paulson.
Madam Chair, moving on then to Section 14, that's the appropriation limit for the townships of $5 million. And then Sections 15 through 25 were Senator Scoy's provisions in Senate File 1536, recommendations from the PILT Advisory Group. Some of that is moving some of the sections of law that are currently in statute section 97A into 477A with other PILT provisions. It does change in section 21 some of the PILT payment rates to, at least in part, to simplify the PILT payment system. Moving down then to Section 26 is Senator Scoy's Senate File 528 for Manoman County. And under current law, there is a $600,000 aid appropriation. This increases that to $1.2 million in 2013 and thereafter. The repealer, Madam Chair, is generally local government aid provisions that are repealed because they're no longer needed with the new formula.
Are there any questions from members about the provisions on aids and credits that Senator, that Mr. Paulson has gone through at this point?
Madam Chair.
Senator Gazelka. I'm glad you joined us today. Thank you,
Madam Chair. In the very first part, the fire pension, I just want clarification. There were bills out there that were taking it from auto and home insurance premiums. Is this different? This is now
Senator Gazelka. This bill was Senator Pappas's bill, and it had been changed in Commerce Committee, I believe, to in the Senate to a general fund appropriation, so that the House bill has it still with a surcharge, but we decided not to do that tax and instead have a general fund appropriation. We thought that was
thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah,
and
that
I
was
like
a better mechanism, we thought, and a fairer one. Anybody else? Senator Nelson on the first article.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question on Section 26 about the Manoman County special aid. And why is that county specified? I have an idea, but I'm not sure. I don't recognize the county name.
Senator Scoy, explain Manoman's dilemma.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Nelson. Mid-2000s, Shooting Star Casino, the largest property taxpayer in the county, went from fee land to trust land, around a $950,000 property tax to Manoman County, the school district, and the city.
Senator Scoy, could you pull the microphone closer? Thank you.
It was a $900,000+ hit to the property tax base of Manoman County, the city, and the school. And at that time, we appropriated $600,000 to be distributed between those three local units of government to help them with their cost of providing services. The impact of time has caused those dollars to be buying less. At one point, I considered putting an inflator on that dollars so that they would grow with inflation, but I think that was not the right decision, and there are no other inflators in the county program aid program. So I just gave them an increase to help them keep up with the cost of inflation.
Senator Nelson.
Just follow, I missed the part about the Shooting Star Casino. Is it no longer there?
Madam Chair, the Shooting Star Casino is there, but it's no longer on fee land. It's on trust land.
Oh,
Manoman
so
County is wholly within the White Earth Indian Reservation.
Thank you.
And
any other clarification, Senator Nelson, that you need?
Is that where the Red Lake school is?
No, okay. It's not Red Lake. Senator Scoy.
Madam Chair, Red Lake is a different Indian reservation. north of White Earth.
Okay, thank you.
Manoman County committee members has the highest tax rate in the state, and they're a relatively low property value county, and they can really use the assistance.
Any other questions on Article 1? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Skoy or Senator Rest. On the Section 14 dealing with the township aid at $5 million, is there a formula within the body of the full document that we don't have that describes how this will be dispersed?
Madam Chair and Senator Senjum, there is a formula. We will get more information to the members about the formula. I believe it is spelled out in the document, but probably not as understandable as it could be. And
okay,
we can get you further clarification on that. But
there
is a formula, and I know it's one of the deciding factors is the percentage of developed ag land.
That's right.
Madam Chair.
Members, Senate media informs us that there is a lot of data noise coming from your iPads and your cell phones. And so I would ask members, if you have your cell phone on the committee table, if you would take it off the committee table, put it down below. Same thing with iPads, so that the video and the audio is clear to those who are trying to follow our actions. Thank
Madam
you
Chair.
Very much. Senator Ortner.
I just wanted to confirm that the LGA formula changes in this bill are the same ones that were presented in the Reform Division. There hasn't been a change.
No, so it's exactly the same.
The spreadsheets that we already have still apply to this version of the bill.
That's correct.
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, and other members, if there are spreadsheets that you would like us to provide with regard to the LGA run, the education runs or the county program aid runs, if we could know that today, we'll provide them tomorrow.
It is. Yeah.
We didn't do a lot of printing for today, not knowing what the members wanted.
But it does not show any difference. It will not show any difference with regard to the LGA run reflects Senator Reinert's bill and proposal with regard to the change in the formula. Senator Ortman.
The chairs will both recall that I asked for a spreadsheet, and it's been prepared. I'm just not sure that it's been widely distributed. That includes the comparison of
sure.
current law 2014 without new money and the proposed formula without new money. And I think that spreadsheet, it may have some limitations, but I also think that it does illuminate some of the changes that are being made. And I do think that we should have the spreadsheet for the equalization adjustments that would show what would happen to school districts under current law and what would happen. And I have not seen that one. I'm not sure that it's been requested, but I think that would be very important. And if we could get that today rather than tomorrow, that would help us visit with our constituents and our school districts so we would know
sure.
How to proceed on that.
Senator Skoy.
I agree, Senator Ortman. We will get that just as soon as we can.
Thank you. And then,
Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair, on that point, and I know that we haven't gotten that far in the bill yet, but is the general ed levy and also the equalization adjustment, are they both in this bill?
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman.
Senator
They
Skoy.
Are in the bill, but only as redundant language. Those are being carried in the K-12 bill. But because there's so many interactions between the school funding formula, when I do any changes in the equalizing formula that impacts aids, it affects a whole bunch of other columns, so I have to carry it as redundant language.
Madam Chair, I recall the interactions were about the biggest headache of carrying the omnibus bill.
And there is no double counting. I mean, whatever was in the K-12 bill is reflected here in the same manner.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions on Article 1? Then we'll move to Article 2. Property tax article, Mr. Paulson. Senator Skoy, did you want to say anything before we get to that? Okay. Senator, Mr. Paulson.
Madam Chair and members, Article 2 of the amendment starts on page 16. The first five sections are from Senate File 726, a bill by Senator Scalzi, and it basically has to do with comprehensive watershed management plans. The bill is currently on general orders. And Section 2 of that bill allows municipalities, counties, townships to levy a tax for comprehensive watershed management plans.
And the effects, any effects on the spreadsheet are found on what page, Ms. McQuaid, on the property tax article that members could look at it?
Madam Chair and members, this is a no-cost item to the Senate, and it's reflected on page 6,
okay.
Line 352.
Okay.
And I'll just note that the items that do cost the general fund are listed on page 4 at the bottom.
Okay.
So I'll just, if members note those two sections.
Okay. Senator Mr. Paulson, or did was there a question to as we began? Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if this is the place for this question, but it has to do with the item we just talked about on the levy authority for the watershed.
For Bowser.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I don't remember hearing that in this committee, and so forgive me if I ask a redundant question. Can that, and maybe this isn't the place to ask it, and if so, I'll get the answer elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, can legacy funds be used to provide that type of watershed planning instead of levying a levy authority?
Senator Scoy?
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, you're right. This is a bill that's on the Senate floor that we incorporated into the tax bill as the appropriate vehicle for it. And we're just thinking that these comprehensive watershed management plans are a really good thing for watershed districts to do. Watershed districts manage water irrespective of what the judicial boundary is. They define themselves by where the water flows. And so Senator Scalzi had this effort, and it was on the Senate floor, and we just thought the appropriate place for it to be was in the tax bill. If we would like further discussion on it, I'd be happy to do that. I don't know that I'm fully prepared to do it this morning.
Thank you. Madam Chair.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you. And Senator Scoy, in that same topic area, is there a limit to what they can levy?
Maybe Mr. Paulson can give us more information on Bowser.
Madam Chair, under Section 2 of the amendment, it just says that the governing body may levy a tax in an amount required to implement Sections 103B to 103B.5355 or a comprehensive watershed management plan. There's not a specific dollar amount specified in this provision.
Okay, please continue, Mr. Paulson.
Madam Chair, moving down then to Senator to Section 6. It's Senator Saxhog's bill, Senate File 1206, dealing with manufactured homes and dealer inventory. And it allows manufactured homes to be considered as dealer inventory. There is a limit in this provision that it's limited to up to 5 assessment years after the date the home was initially claimed as dealer inventory. That was Section 7. Section 8, then, requires that assessors that physically appraise real property for property tax purposes must be licensed or accredited by the State Board of Assessors beginning in July 1st, 2017. I believe that's an initiative of the Chair. Sections 9 and 12 deal with personal property used for pollution control. Section 9 just indicates that property not otherwise required to be installed or required by a permit from the PCA is included in the exemption to the extent that it's used for abatement and control of pollution. Section 10, then, is Senator Hayden's bill, Senate File 136, property owned by an Indian tribe. And basically, it does limit the provision somewhat, no more than 2 contiguous parcels, not more than 20,000 square feet, does not include single-family housing, apartments, agricultural, and so forth. and that expires with taxes payable in 2024. Section 11 is Senator Wieger's bill, Senate File 161, electric generation facility exemption for a municipal power agency that we heard in the committee. Section 12 goes with Section 9, and basically it just says that a taxpayer claiming an exemption for pollution control property, in addition to filing that with the Commissioner of Revenue, must also file it with the assessor of the assessment district that the property is located. Section 13, then, Madam Chair, Senate File 1520, Senator Rest, and it's a limit on valuation for Class 4D low-income apartments, and it just limits the value to not more than $100,000 times the number of dwelling units. Section 14 is from the chair. It's a says that for conservation.
Mr. Paulson, I will just interject with regard to the 4D provision that we are working on other language, substitute language there that we think is will be a better solution than what's in the bill right now.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Section 14 deals with property valuation in the case of a conservation easement, and it says that the value that's subject to a conservation easement shall not be reduced. But there's does not apply in a situation where it's riparian buffers along lakes and streams for used for water quality control. Section 15 and 16, Madam Chair, are the Senator Scoy's Senate File 1499, the simplification of the agricultural homestead provisions, as he mentioned, requiring that someone claiming agricultural homestead must live on the farm. This provision was delayed 1 year for implementation purposes. That moves down then to Section 17 on page 28. That was Senator Eakin's bill, Senate File 1500. Senator Eakin's bill required that the disparity reduction credit be reduced to the lowest effective rate in the neighboring state. This provision changes that from 2.3% effective rate under current law to 1.9%, so it is still fixed in the law. Madam Chair, Section 18 on page 29 one of the state levy provisions. The seasonal rec property remains as under current law, but for payable 2014 and subsequent years, the rate on commercial industrial property will be frozen at the rate that was imposed for taxes payable in 2002. And, Madam Chair, Section 19 strikes the exemption for electric generation machinery from the statewide business tax. They would now be subjected to the state levy. Madam Chair, Sections 21 through 23, 20 through 23, relate to Senator Thompson's bill, Senate File 1572, Confession of Judgments. Moving on then down to Section 24, Madam Chair, is the Sections 24 through 27 deal with the rent credit that was in the governor's proposal, property tax refund for renters. These provisions are as they were in the governor's bill, Senate File 552. Moving down then, Madam Chair, to page 38, Section 27. It was Senate File 492, Senator Scoy. Section 27 is actually new, and it restricts participation in the SFIA program that cannot also be subject to a conservation easement through the Outdoor Heritage Fund or a comparable easement of a governmental or nonprofit entity. Section 28 is another SFIA provision dealing with the requirement to allow motorized access. It's for participation in the program. Section 29 just has to do with, because there was a reduction in the program, this puts in language to say that in a situation where the state reduces the payments, a claimant is able to leave the program. Section 30 is modified. Under this provision, the incentive payment will be $7.25 per acre and the maximum of $100,000 per taxpayer is eliminated. Madam Chair, then, sections 31, 32, Senate File 212 of Senator Franson's bill, allowing for special service districts to be created. That authority is extended through 2018 without specific legislative approval. On page 41, section 33 and 34, chair's initiative to dealing with special assessments against state agencies, which under current law, the agencies, basically the language says that they're not bound by the determination of the governing body. This says that they may, after consultation and agreement, pay an amount less than is determined by the governing body making the special assessment. And Section 34 appropriates $5 million in fiscal year 24 and thereafter to state agencies to cover the cost of those assessments. Moving on then, Madam Chair, to page 42, Section 35, that's Senate File 207, Senator Wicklund. It's been modified from Senator Wicklund's original proposal. Madam Chair, this provides an additional $4 million to the area-wide, Bloomington's area-wide portion of the levy for taxes payable 14 through 2023. moving down to Section 36.
Excuse me, Mr. Paulson, Senator Reutemann.
I thought it would make sense to ask, what was the justification for adding the $4 million for Bloomington?
Senator Skoy, the Bloomington project.
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, what's going on? I think in order for the Mall of America to move forward, they're looking at some support for their project in the realm of around $9 million a year. There have been a number of proposals around the number of years. One was a pretty major TIF expansion that would have fallen exclusively on the residents of Bloomington to raise that money. There's been a proposal out this year that would use fiscal disparities program to fund that money. The proposal in the Senate bill uses a combination of those two and the exemption on construction materials. So there's going to be some local effort. There's a three-year extension to a couple of TIF provisions. There's a fiscal disparities component and a state component. And as I said in my opening, I think that is a the policy change that really is occurring is that we're going to have these major economic development projects in the state. The state's going to be a partner in those.
Senator Ortman. I would just point out that with the new formula and the new money in LGA, Bloomington would also get a $1.6 million aid payment for LGA. It seems like an awful lot of help for the city of Bloomington, I would just say. I'm a big supporter of the Mall of America, but I'm not sure about direct appropriations from the state.
Well, Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair and Senator Ortman, the residents of Bloomington have carried the development costs of the mall to date on TIF only. And it's been a very successful venture for not only Bloomington but also the state. We receive a lot of state revenues from there. Well, I just think it's appropriate that we participate.
Mr. Paulson.
Madam Chair, moving on then to Section 36 on page 42, there are two local provisions. The first one is for the Cook Corps Ambulance District. That was Senator Skoy's bill, Senate File 30. The next one is for a cemetery levy in Carlton County. That was Senate File 19, Senator Lurie. Section 38 relates to Senator Franzen's bill 212, again extending that sunset for the special service special assessments district. And also Section 39. Section 40 is Senator Champion's bill, Senate File 1324, and that relates to the allowing reimbursement for property tax abatements in Hennepin County because there was a deadline that was missed, and that appropriates $336,000. Madam Chair, Section 41 is Senator Herr's bill, Senate File 633, and the property tax exemption for the St. Paul ballpark. Moving on then to Section 42 on page 45, that's Senator Champion's bill, Senate File 1194, related to the Target Center, both Sections 42 and 43. Madam Chair, moving down then to Section 44 on page 47, Senator Coonan's Senate File 394, having to do with the biofuels tanks that was requested an exemption. This language in Sections 44 and 45 provides for moratorium, saying that the assessor may not change the taxable status of these properties, and then Section 45 calls for a study to on these types of properties to determine taxability or the appropriateness of an exemption.
And I would point out to members that these last several sections they're not codified. They're session law, just to make sure that you understand that. Mr. Paulson?
Madam Chair, moving on then to page 48, Section 46. It's another Sustainable Forest Initiative incentive provision, and it just makes it clear that those who are terminated under the special law because the state cut the payment under that program are allowed to re-enroll. Madam Chair, Section 47 is a new provision. Because of the exemption of local government sales purchases by local governments from the sales tax, this provision requires a property tax savings report and requires counties and cities to have a meeting, a public hearing, to discuss the estimated savings and how they'll be used for property tax levy reductions or fee reductions as deemed appropriate.
And members, that was in the in the division report, that area, that issue, and I worked with representatives from the local governments to have a level of accountability, but do it in a way different than what was in the division report.
Madam Chair, then moving on to Section 48 on page 49. This is related to Senate File 1486 that Senator Limmer brought before the committee. It does not change the fiscal disparities calculation as Senator Limmer's bill did. This provides for the Commissioner of Revenue to convene a working group to discuss the issues of fiscal disparities and services provided by the Metropolitan Council. And the working group can make an advisory recommendation by February 2014. Madam Chair, that is Article 2, property taxes.
Are there questions for Mr. Paulson or Senator Skoy about Article Number 2? Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Skoy, if I can take a look at Section 18, that's the change to business property tax. Can you give me the net impact of making those changes?
Senator Skoy?
I believe I'll do it from memory. I think I can get close enough. I believe the impact of freezing the rate back to 2002 for CI is around $100 million, and the inclusion of the electrical generation personal property into the statewide business tax is another $28 million. I think that's pretty close. Ms. McQuay, how am I doing?
Madam Chair and Senator Skoy, the provision is noted in the spreadsheet on page 3, line 127, and the fixing the rate for the first biennium brings in $139.3 million, and eliminating the public utility electric generation exemption is $31.38 million.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Gazalka, we looked at this, and because the valuations do fluctuate, you know, those numbers are going to go up and down over time. And I was cautioned by Senate staff that over time that might turn negative.
Well, Madam Chair, I just, you know, this is the first time I've seen
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. These numbers, but it looks like a huge increase to business property taxes, and mm-hmm. you know, particularly the small business owner, I'm very concerned. This is an area that where we need to be competitive, and if we're not, that could be detrimental to job creators in Minnesota.
Well, and
Senator Skoy,
and Madam Chair, Senator Gazalka, my effort is to not have classifications of property taxed differently, and we're just making this class of property have their taxation on market value increases or decreases like everybody else in the state, and that's the effort.
And Madam Chair, if I can make one
Senator
more
Gazalka.
Comment. Senator Skoy, I know you're working hard on this. We talk quite a bit about a lot of different issues, and you know, if we're already charging them 1.5 to 2 times as much and then add this on to that, that's where it becomes you know, a concern for me. If we had the same rate for everybody regardless of what the property was, that would be an argument I would wholeheartedly support, but because we're already collecting quite a bit more, and then it becomes a big difference.
And Madam Chair, Senator Gazalka, I also am concerned. I think there will be a whole number of offsetting property tax reductions in the K-12 bill. There's $150 million that will be reduced that will impact the business community. We have the LGA, the county program aid, that will impact the business community. There's the exemption for sales tax for local units of government. That will impact not only property taxes but also hopefully fees. So I think that there is a number of offsetting property tax reductions so that hopefully this nets out to I don't know if it's going to be zero, but it not as significant as it might look if you just focus on that one line.
Thank you.
Senator Ortman.
Madam Chair, is there any adjustment to the statewide business property tax? And I also think the state general ed levy we're here is going to be passed as well. So those items still apply to the business property taxpayers in Minnesota, yes?
Senator Skoy.
I didn't understand the question.
The statewide business property tax, that continues as is. There's no adjustment to that. So our businesses are paying the statewide business property tax. They'll have an increase in the CI property tax, and they'll also have an increase with the state general ed levy.
Madam Chair, this is a change to the statewide business property tax, that it will now be calculated on the value times the rate as opposed to a dollar number with an inflator on it.
And it yields $139 million more out of the business property taxpayers.
Yep. Senator Ortman, Senator Skoy enumerated to Senator Gazalka any number of other places in the bill where there's going to be reductions in CI property taxes as well.
And Madam Chair, not in this bill. Not in this bill, though.
Yes.
You just said it would not be in this bill, right?
It's in this bill.
It's in
the
this
K-12.
Bill. It's in both bills because of the redundancy, because of the interaction, Senator Ortman.
And
Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, there also will be in this bill the $300 takeoff of the voter-approved referendum, the county program aid, the LGA, the township aid, the sales tax elimination for local units. There's a number of property tax reductions in this bill.
Any other questions on Article 2? Senator Ortman?
Madam Chair, with respect to the disparity reduction aid, which is page 28, section 17, I'm wondering where that is on the spreadsheet.
Ms. McQuaid.
Madam Chair and members, the disparity reduction credit threshold change to 1.9 it can be found on page 5, line 248.
And, Madam Chair, the cost,
Senator Ortman?
The cost to that credit is $46 million in 2016-17. Is that right? So just $2.3 million. Why does it go up so much, if I can ask, from one biennium to the next?
Madam Chair and Senator Ortman, that the 2.3 is the pension aid line, so
yep, sorry.
Up above that, it's a loss to the general fund of 2.08 million in the first biennium, and then 4.28 in the second biennium.
Well, and if I understand how that works, Madam Chair, and perhaps to counsel
Senator
or
Ortman.
The author, the communities with the disparity, this isn't the border credit, but the disparity, well, maybe council could just explain which communities get this aid and why it's being increased.
Senator Skoy, this was Senator Eaton's bill.
This is Senator Eaton's bill, and I believe the communities are Moorhead, Breckenridge, Dilworth, and East Grand Forks, but I would defer to Senate Council to clarify.
Mr. Paulson.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I don't have the list in front of me. Those are communities, or maybe one or two more. I can look that up if
okay.
Like.
If we could get that information, that'd be great for Senator Ortman. Anything else?
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dietzick and then Senator Senger. Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In Section 48, the Metropolitan Fiscal Disparities Working Group, I'm assuming that.
I can't hear.
Sorry. On Section 48, the Metropolitan Fiscal Disparities Working Group, I'm assuming that if people want to participate in that, they just contact, it looks like the department, our Commissioner of Revenue will be setting that up.
That's correct, Senator Dietzick. We decided not to just name people, but actually have people that are interested in that policy area. They want to be part of it, they're in.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, Senator Dietzick, of course that could happen on its own. We wanted to provide the department the direction to staff that so that we knew that it would happen and that there would be minutes and some kind of reporting out of the meetings.
Anything? Senator Senjo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Page 20, Section 10. Where it talks about certain property owned by an Indian tribe, and it goes on in a city of 300,000 population. Does that property already exist, or?
Yes, that's the Senator Champion's bill that we heard early on. Senator Skoy, you want to talk about how it came into the bill then?
Sure, Madam Chair, and Senator Senjum.
Senator Hayden's bill, excuse me.
Senator Hayden's bill, it deals with a building that's in Minneapolis that is owned by, I think it's the Indian Affairs Council. There was some dispute with the assessor about the property tax payable on that. I believe an agreement has been reached with the county and the advocates, and this is the compromise language between all the affected parties.
Thank you.
Anything else on Article 2? Then moving along to Article 3, education aids and levies. Ms. McQuaid.
Madam Chair and members, Article 3 is constitutes Senate file. For the most part, Senate File 576, this was Senator Skoy's bill. There are other sections that have been pulled in as a result of the interactions with the Senate File 453, the K-12 bill, and I will orient you to the spreadsheet on page 5, lines 313 to 316 are the aids, the property tax recognition shift, and the aid payment offset to accommodate the changes in this bill. Section 1 is the general education revenue that most of the changes in this are reflect changes that the K-12 bill made. However, on line 32, you'll see the addition of the education advancement revenue, which this proposal seeks to incorporate into general education. Section 2 is also a corresponding change to the general education revenue, and And then Section 3 is changes to the equity index that the K-12 omnibus bill made that has some interactions with this bill. Section 4 is actually the new revenue. So this is the $300 of new revenue that this bill provides. Section 5 is the education advancement levy. This is the levy portion of that revenue equalized at $785,000. And this then seeks to equalize this $300 at about 50% greater than the $300 that was on the operating referendum. Then Section 6 is the education advancement aid. This would be the aid that is paid out after the levy is calculated. And then Section 7 is the general education levy. This is the new general education levy that the K-12 omnibus bill proposes to incorporate. And on line 3 on page 52 is the incorporation of also the education advancement revenue. So then Section 8 is the addition of the education advancement revenue to the general education program.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Ms. McQuay, starting in here somewhere is the redundant language between the E-12 bill and this bill. Is that what starts here with the general education levy section?
Mr. Chair, everything here is redundant except for the addition of the education advancement revenue language, which is specific to this bill. Everything else is redundant.
So maybe we could just move on.
Madam Chair, that would be my thought. If we could just address the items that are in the tax bill and not carried elsewhere, I think it would move the committee hearing along.
Okay. Madam Chair and members, if you go to line 53.34, this is the subtraction of the $300 off the operating referendum. And then on page 54, line 14, this is the subtraction of $300 off the operating referendum for the districts at the cap. Madam Chair, then then the next change is then on page 60. This is direction to the commissioner to reduce the levies that expire first. So take the $300 off the operating referendum that expires first. And that was as the committee heard the bill in Senate File 576 in this committee. Then Section 11 is a one-year freeze on operating referendum. And that is the same as the committee heard the bill. And then new to this bill is Section 12. This is the decrease to the aid payment percentage by 0.2 to offset the costs associated with the property tax recognition shift associated with the reduction in the levies of approximately $100 million. Then Section 13 is the appropriation for general education because there is a new aid coming into the education as a result of this $300, equalized $300, there is an additional amount of general education aid going. So I don't want you to confuse this with overwriting what the K-12 bill is doing. This is simply the over and above what the K-12 bill is doing. Then those appropriations are on lines 61.3 and 61.4.
Okay, any questions on Article 3? Most of it is redundant. Article 4, special taxes. Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair and members, Article 4, special taxes, contains many of the provisions that were in separate articles in the division report, but there are some new items, and I'll note those briefly. Sections 1, 2, 3, 4 are provisions from Senate File 367, Senator Reinert's bill, that would require the prepaid 911 fees to be collected and specifies provisions for the Department of Public Safety to administer and remit those fees.
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair and members, on the provision that's distributing some of this money, that's to help with the armor payments. You know, we struggled with the sales tax exemption for these armor facilities, and what we're doing is directing the department to make grants to counties that have not received or give priority to counties that have not received federal or state money first, because we didn't think that they should be receiving sales tax exemption on those dollars. So we'll take a run and see if this is helpful in developing the armor build out.
Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair and members, Section 5 contains the same provisions as in the division report pertaining to the commissioner's participation in audits performed by the Multi-State Tax Commission. Minnesota's participation in the MTC is repealed at the end of this article. Section 9, the sports memorabilia tax, the only change here is an appropriation of 5% of the revenues from the wholesale tax to counties for reimbursements for youth sports.
And where, Ms. Pollack, where is that language, specific language?
65.
Oh, 65.1, sub 5?
Yes.
Ms. Pollack, I thought that we were carrying that at 5% rather than 10.
Madam Chair, that's correct. I'm sorry that this was not corrected in this version, but the spreadsheet reflects a 5%.
5%. So there'll be a technical amendment to reflect what's in the spreadsheet.
What line are we looking at for the?
We're looking at page 65, the top of the page. Our spreadsheet shows a 5% of the revenue collected from the sports memorabilia tax will be used for youth sports grants throughout the state, not 10%.
Madam Chair, the special taxes are on page 3, line 143 is where the special taxes start. However, the appropriation for youth sports, for grants to youth sports, is on page 5. Line 318.
And that is at 5%. Is that correct, Ms. McQuay?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ordman.
The tax is at 13%, not at a normal sales tax rate. Why at 13%?
This is a wholesale rate. Senator Skoy, you want to explain it more?
Madam Chair, I think you just explained it. This is the wholesale rate that we're applying the tax at. We just think that's appropriate.
And just to clarify, Mr. Chair, your intention is that this be just to be allocated into the general fund to offset state expenses, not necessarily designated to the Viking Stadium shortfall.
Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, this is part of the sales tax reform that the reform division worked on. It came out of the reform division report.
Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair, Section 10 contains a similar provision from the division report, although the rate of tax and the reimbursement provision or the refund provisions in Section 11 are slightly changed to reflect uniformity of taxation. Section 14 and 15 reflects Senator Peterson's bill, Senate File 1407, that was heard in this committee last week. It makes some changes to the tax rate for paper pull tabs at places where at least 50% of gross receipts are received from paper bingo. Madam Chair, section 16 through 28 contain the cigarette and tobacco provisions that are the same as in the division report. Sections 29 similarly, I'm sorry, section 29 pertains to the aviation fuels tax that's the same as in the division report. Section 30 pertains to the aviation tax changes in the division report. Sections 31 and 32 contain provisions from Senator Dietzick's bill, Senate File 13, pertaining to the Hennepin and Ramsey County mortgage and deed taxes. These sections extend the expiration of those taxes to 2023. Section 33 through 43 contain provisions from Senator Reinert, Senate File 367, on the prepaid wireless fees. Section 44 is the same floor stocks tax that was in the division report. Section 45 contains some language pertaining to taxes paid to Indian tribes, and this is a result of the health impact fee being repealed in this article. And the health impact fee was repealed in the tobacco article from the division report.
Are there any questions about that provision, members? Maybe I should explain that.
Senator Scoy, why don't you talk about the reimbursement dilemma here?
Madam Chair.
Or Section 45.
Yeah, Madam Chair and members, the Indian tribes have an agreement with the state whereby there's the sales tax on cigarettes is reimbursed back to them in proportion to what they pay that tax. They're not subject to state taxes. When the health impact fee went into effect in 2005, it was not a tax, so it was not administered by the Department of Revenue. Even though most people would have recognized that as a tax, it wasn't calculated in the current revenue sharing agreements. And now that we're repealing the health impact fee, we have to bring into account those revenues that were not shared for those number of years. And so hence this effort to bring this into an agreement, and hopefully from now on then we will have uniformity with regard to cigarette sales in the state, and hopefully we will have all our cigarettes being stamped and tracked.
Okay, continue.
Madam Chair and members, Section 46 pertains to the report for changes to the aviation tax provisions earlier in the article. Section 47 contains language pertaining to the armor grants from the E911 fees that Senator Scoy mentioned earlier. Section 48 is the same as in the division report on the tobacco tax collection report.
Okay, questions on Article 4 from members? Seeing none, Article 5. Article 5, Ms. Pollack, income and corporate.
And Madam Chair, I'll just first orient the committee to the spreadsheet. Okay. The income tax changes are on page 1, starting on line 4.
Thank you, Ms. McQuaid. Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair and members, Section 1 contains provisions from Senator Jensen's bill, Senate File 1451, that provides for tax credits for qualified expansions of Greater Minnesota businesses. This section contains provisions to define what is a qualified business and how the business must be certified. And in Subdivision 4 on page 91, line 6, states the two tax incentives. There's a sales tax exemption. The specific provisions are discussed in the sales tax article, and the jobs credit that is discussed later in this article. Section 2, 3, 4, and 5, 6, 7 are the same as the division report pertaining to the Angel Investment Credit and expanding the credit to qualified Greater Minnesota small businesses. I'm sorry, and Section 8 as well extends the sunset for the program. Section 9 contains provisions from Senator Eakin's bill, Senate File 241, establishing a program for internships in Greater Minnesota. It provides a tax credit, which is discussed later in the article, but it's limited to $2,000 per taxpayer and a total of $2 million per year total for all eligible taxpayers. Section 11 and 12 contain the same provisions as the division report on foreign operating corporation provisions, repealing those provisions. Section 13 as well. Just get to it. Section 14 contains the railroad track maintenance subtraction from the division report. Section 15 is a new provision that provides an increased third tier for the individual income tax at 9.4%. And it also raises the income thresholds for all of the rates. And this increased threshold is just to reflect inflation adjustments, which are made in Section 16. So these, the numbers in Section 15 reflect updated inflation, and then the new inflation starts after tax year 13. Section 17 contains the specific language for the Greater Minnesota Internship Credit from Senator Eakin's bill. Section 18 allows a credit for current military service. The current credit is increased from $120 to $200 per month. In Section 19, the credit for past military service is increased from $750 to $1,500 per year. Section 20 changes some of the criteria for qualifying for the past credit for military service, and it somewhat expands the definition of what a qualified individual is. Section 21 is the same as the division report on the increasing the second tier for the research and development credit. Starting with Section 22, there are some new provisions pertaining to the historic structure rehabilitation credit. The language in Section 22 is just clarifying to help with the administration of the program. Section 23 reflects a change that was made in the division pertaining to the application fee for projects. Section 24 and 25 are also somewhat clarifying changes for the program. Section 26 adds some language to cap the appropriation for the historic structure credit at $15 million per fiscal year. Section 27 extends the sunset of the historic credit. Section 28 provides the calculation and the requirements for the jobs credit for Greater Minnesota businesses that was authorized in Section 1. Section 29 is the clothing sales tax credit, which is the same as the division report. Sections 30, 31, 32, 33 through 38 are the same as the division report pertaining to foreign operating subtractions, foreign royalty subtractions, and the REIT dividend subtraction. Section 39 contains some changes to the effective date for the historic structure rehabilitation credit. These are the same provisions that were contained in the omnibus bill last year, as well as the clarifying provisions to the historic structure credit that I mentioned before. Section 40 provides some language for paying out the clothing sales tax credit because of the change in the effective year of the income credit versus the effective change for the sales tax of clothing. This was also contained in the division report. The repealers are also were also contained in the division report.
Members, I would point out with regard to that article that different from the division report, the provisions that we had for that Senator Eaton had for technology transfer program and mine with regarding the NOLs are not included in this in the omnibus bill as presented here. I think that's. I think those were the two that that were cut, as I recall. Just one second, Ms. Pollack. Were there others that I missed other than those two?
Madam Chair, the ME subtraction allowance for dental showed up also as a cost to the corporate franchise, but that would be the only change, and as well as the NOL from the corporate article that is in the division report.
Okay, thank you. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we could go back to page 112 of the bill that has the increase in the income tax. I don't believe we had a hearing on the governor's income tax proposal. I don't recall that we had one here on this one, and I'm wondering if we could talk about the differences between the two proposals.
Senator Scoy?
Well, I'm trying to recall. I think the governor has a fourth tier at 7.85%. We have a 9.85%, and we have a third tier at 9.4%.
Well, and Madam Chair,
Senator Ortman, I think if you wanted to look at the impacts we do have on line four of the lines four and five of the spreadsheet, the difference between the governor's proposal at his rate at the fourth tier and the Senator Scoy's proposal at just changing the third tier. Direct your attention there, but certainly go ahead with your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, the governor's fourth tier applied at what income level, say, for married couples?
250. It's 250.
I think.
Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair, the original governor's bill, the fourth tier applied at income over $250,000 for married couples filing jointly at 9.85%. Singles, $150,000, and for unmarried individuals and heads of household, $200,000.
And if I'm correct in reading it, then what Senator Scoy in this bill proposes is a new tax rate of 9.4% on married couples that earn over $140,960. Am I reading that correctly?
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, yes.
And 9.4% on individuals that earn $79,730.
Madam Chair and Senator
Scoy.
Ortman, yes.
Well, may I ask what the reasoning is for applying that higher income tax other than raising revenue on folks that make $79,000 a year or $140,000 per married couple? It's a pretty extensive tax imposition.
Senator Scoy.
Madam Chair and Senator Ortman, we did look at doing a fourth tier that was at 4 or 5% of Minnesotans. We realized that the third tier impacted 6% of Minnesotans. We didn't think it made much sense to have a fourth tier at 4% and a third tier at 2% of Minnesotans, so we raised the third tier.
Well, to the extent that there was an effort here to tax the rich, I think this is not it. I think this is a failure. I think at $140,000, these are middle-class, hardworking Minnesotans and not representative of the rich.
Senator Scoy?
Madam Chair and Senator Ortman, the average family income, which is family income in Minnesota, is $54,000.
Any other questions about Article 5? Then Article...
Madam Chair?
Article 6, Ms.
Madam
Pollack?
Chair?
Senator Nelson, sorry.
Thank you. I have a question about the foreign royalty deduction. I think that was in probably the reform division. I didn't get to...
Yes, it was eliminated there.
Yes. Can I just get a brief synopsis of what that does?
Ms. Pollack, you want to talk about the
and where is
foreign
that?
Royalty deduction, when it was started, or whatever information you have?
And what page is that on?
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson. Those changes are begin in just a moment, please. Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, the changes begin in Section 13, starting on 109, and the strike-through language on the top of page 111. Under current law, corporations may deduct 80% of their foreign royalty income. Under this provision, that deduction would be disallowed. So corporations would pay the corporate income tax or the corporate franchise tax on their foreign royalty income on the same basis as other corporate income.
So they're currently able to deduct 40% of that, and now it goes down to zero?
80%. They could
deduct. Goes Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, 80% is 80. They are able to deduct 80%.
And this bill takes it to zero.
Repeals it. Yes.
Repeals it. I'm just concerned. I assume there was testimony of how that might impact our providers, our businesses that are competing successfully globally. Is this going to prohibit them from bringing their investments back to Minnesota?
Senator Nelson, we had extensive testimony on that in January, and then again we had testimony on it in the division report. I'm assuming we could have additional testimony on that when we get to testimony.
Maybe I can follow up with
sure,
you offline on that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair.
Any other, Senator Skoy? And this is also, by the way, Governor's proposal that we're following here. Senator Skoy?
And Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, I think the division did a good job with regard to the corporate reform area and keeping that revenue neutral. So any revenue that was generated from the elimination of provisions was reinvested back into Minnesota corporations through the R&D credit or other areas, such as reducing the rate for all Minnesota businesses and corporations.
Thank you, Senator Skoy. Anything else on Article 5, Article 6? I think these will probably start going a little bit faster.
Madam Chair, the only change to Article 6 from the division report is that the decoupling provisions are taken out, and the remaining provisions are the language to clarify the existing qualified small business property and qualified farm property exclusions. I would note that on page 138 on lines 16 and 27, there's some clarifying language to state that poultry farm property is considered a qualifying property under the exclusion. The department, as I understand, had been administering the exclusion that way, but this would just make that clear. And that's Article 6.
Okay, any questions on Article 6? Article 7, Ms. Pollack, sales tax. And I would point out that you'll see in going through here, we have made a comment that because we've gotten so many questions about what was being considered as part of the base broadening and what was not, that we went to a procedure where the things that and services, goods and services that are being included in the base broadening are named specifically. So if you're not on this list, you're not on the list. Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair. Sections 1 through 7 are the same as the division report. Sections 8 and 9 are the same as in the division report. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Let me just note on Section 2 as – On Section 2, as you mentioned, on page 144, there is the list of newly taxable services that constitute a sale and purchase. This language is essentially the same as it was in the division report, but as you mentioned, Madam Chair, these are the only items that are that would be taxable and included in the base broadening under the sales tax article. Sections 5, 6, 7, 8 through 17 are the same. In section 18, the general sales tax rate is changed to 5.675%. I believe in the division report it was 5.677. And then corresponding in section 19, the constitutional legacy rate is 0.325%. I believe there it was 0.323.
And the effect of that is that the base broadening, the lowering of the rate, will show no loss of revenues available from the legacy amendment.
Madam Chair, Section 20 is a new provision from the division report. It increases the rate on rental cars. This is the same as was in the governor's bill. Section 21 is the same as the division report. Section 22 reflects the amendment that was adopted in the division report pertaining to dropship sales. And those provisions go through Section 25. Section 26 is the same as the division report. Section 27, the change to prescription drugs is the same as in the division report, so that only prescription drugs would be exempt from taxation. Also exempt are durable medical goods. These are provisions from Senator Eaton's bill, Senate File 1203. And those provisions go through Section 28. Section 29 is the same as in the division report. Section 30 is the same as in the division report. This is the capital equipment exemption, and it's phased in for first for businesses with not more than 80 full-time employees. The only difference between this provision and the division report is that this one starts a year later in July 1, 2014. Section 31 is the same as the division report. Section 32 contains a provision from Senator Schmidt's bill, Senate File 868, pertaining to qualified data centers. This modifies the criteria for what qualifies as a qualified data center, including building requirements and minimum amount of investment and square footage requirements for the facility. Section 33 contains the provisions for the Greater Minnesota Business Expansion Sales Tax Exemption. And this exemption was authorized in the earlier article, the income tax article, from Senator Jensen's bill, Senate File 451. Sections 34 through 36 are the same as the division report. Section 37 provides an exemption for qualifying purchases by critical access dental providers. This was Senator Ingebrigtsen's provision. And I would note that it's effective retroactively to 2007. Section 38, 39, 40, and 41 are the same as the division report. Section 42 provides a sales tax exemption for qualifying biopharmaceutical manufacturing facilities. There are a number of qualifying factors that are listed beginning on line 17 of page 178. Section 43 provides a sales tax exemption for qualifying research and development facilities. Again, there are qualifying factors here. Section 44 provides a sales tax exemption for qualifying purchases by an industrial measurement, manufacturing, and controls facility. These are provisions from Senator Pratt's bill. Section 45 contains a provision exempting from sales tax qualifying purchases by a retail, hotel, amusement, and office construction facility. Sections 46 through 48 are essentially the same as the division report. They pertain to the refund process for the sales tax exemptions. The only changes are the additional exemptions that were added in this article from the division report. Section 49 is the same as the division report. Section 50 contains a provision from Senator Skoy's bill, I believe Senate File 1392, pertaining to how local political subdivisions may spend money in the case of a local referendum. Section 51 contains language that is the same as the division report pertaining to the tax base for locally collected taxes. Beginning in Section 22, there are some local tax provisions. Section 52 provides some clarifying language for the St. Cloud local sales tax, and this was in Senator Peterson's Senate File 79. Section 53 is that same the same local tax provision. Section 54 contains some clarifying language for the Clearwater local sales tax. I would note that there was some confusion over the last few years about what the local referendum authorized and what the state had authorized later, and how the local how the city imposed the sales tax. And so this language clarifies what the legislature authorized and what the city adopted in terms of their local taxing authority.
Senator Skoy?
Madam Chair, I thought within discussions we were going to reference the comprehensive land use plan or comprehensive plan that Clearwater, City of Clearwater, had, as opposed to listing these these provisions.
And you're referring to Section 54?
Section 54.
Ms. Pollack? Yeah.
Madam Chair and Senator Skoy, in speaking with the City of Clearwater, my understanding is that the comprehensive plan that they adopted reflected their inadequate city improvement plan, their CIP, and so referring to the comprehensive plan wouldn't be entirely accurate. They said that they had worked through this language with the reviser and assured me that this reflects what has been authorized by the legislature in the past.
Senator Skoy?
Madam Chair, and I'll talk to Senator Brown, but their mistake was not talking to the committee members.
And so we'll review this Section 54 with Senator Brown, and if you would remind us to do that. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Senate Sections 55 through 57 are the same as in the division report.
Okay, are there any questions for Ms. Pollack from the members on Article 7? Much of it, again, from the division report. Article 8, local development. Mr. Paulson.
Madam Chair, Article 8 begins on page 188. The first sections 1 through 6 and section 9 are relate to mining reclamation project areas, language that's been before the committee in the past. Senators Limmer, Clausen, and Hall have had bills relating to this because of aggregate mining operations in their areas that require reclamation. This is a more general provision that covers the individual provisions that were requested. Moving on to Section 7. Section 7 and 8, page 192 and 193, relates to extension of the 2010 jobs bill by 2 years, the TIF provisions that was carried in bills by Senator Rest, Clausen, and Housley. Section 9 on page 194 is another mining reclamation project provision. Page 195, Section 10 relates to a bill by Senator Hoffman, Senate File 610, that extends the four-year time limit for activity to occur within a tax increment financing district. Page 196, this is from Senate File 670 from Senator Rest, extends the five-year rule to 10 years. This is Sections 11 and 12 for revenues to be paid to a third party, repay bonds, and so forth. That's Sections 11 and 12. Section 13, Madam Chair, is relates to the new general education levy and a concern that you had expressed that there not be additional state cost from general education levy that relates to value being captured by tax increment districts. This section excludes the portion of school tax rate attributable to the general education levy from the tax rate that applies to calculate the tax increment in a tax increment district. Down to Section 14, that was Senate File 48 of Senator Wieger relating to the city of Oakdale. Page 199, Section 15, Senator Champion, Senate File 1440. For the streetcar financing, a change was made rather than the geographic area. This language specifies the parcels that are involved in the streetcar financing value district. Moving on to Section 16, that was Senate File 229, Senator Metzen, the Dakota County Community Development Agency provisions that he carried in that bill. Section 17 on page 202, Senate File 881, Senator Peterson, relating to a TIF district in St. Cloud. It's to be deemed to be a gap district between 1979 and 1982. Section 18, Senate File 942, Senator Bach, City of Ely tax increment financing provision that he carried. Section 19 on page 203 is Senator Newman, Senate File 592 for the City of Glencoe. And finally, Madam Chair, Section 20 on page 204, Senate File 207, Senator Wicklund relates to the Mall of America provision again. And this allows the City of Bloomington to transfer parcels from their tax increment District 1C to 1G. This was contained in the original Senate File 207.
And I would remind advocates for the various TIF proposals to read the language carefully, make sure that it reflects the work that we did. A lot of times there are a lot of cross-references, and want to make sure that you look at those carefully so that I believe they're all correct, but sometimes we find something. So if you find something, let us know. Article 9.
Madam Chair and members.
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, is this article the same as the provision we heard yesterday in committee? And perhaps we could.
I thought I would ask her if that, if the yesterday with regard to the DMC, I offered an amendment. I believe that that is the language that is now Article 9. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct with a few exceptions, if you'd like me to go over
Why don't
those.
You just mention what the changes were?
Sure. Madam Chair, there's just a few changes on page 206. The quorum for the board is defined as 6 members.
Okay.
On page 210, the Olmsted County is authorized to impose a wheelage tax, and that can be for general transportation purposes in the county.
The DMC?
Yeah.
Is this the updated line?
No, that's the.
And then on page.
This is the.
224. These are the cities that are authorized to have revenue sharing with the Rochester local sales tax. The formula for imposing the. For eligibility for revenue sharing is removed, and some additional specific cities are named.
Are those adjusted?
And then on page 226 and 227, the Rochester lodging tax, that the provision was contained in the bill, but the revenue from that tax is to go to the existing lodging tax revenue for the Mayo Civic Center complex and not the Destination Medical Center.
Okay. Okay, then we'll go to, we had extensive discussion of that yesterday. We'll go to the minerals article. Mr. Paulson.
Madam Chair, the minerals article, Article 10, starts on page 228. Section 1 corrects an issue with the taconite aid allocation between school districts and cities and towns. Under current law, there's an issue with too much money being allocated to cities and towns, and this corrects that between the schools and the municipalities. Madam Chair, Section 2, language on page 230. This language transfers an amount equivalent to 5 cents per ton of taconite production tax, but it's occupation tax revenue from the general fund to the special revenue fund. And it's for mining, environmental, and regulatory account and special revenue fund for environmental issues, regulatory services for mining operations. Section 3, Madam Chair, increases the taconite production tax rate effectively by 5 cents per ton for the 2013 production year. Section 4 increases the distribution of the taconite production tax to school districts by 9 cents, and Section 5 reduces the distribution of the taconite homestead credit fund by 9 cents. Section 6, Madam Chair, on page 237, I'm sorry, that's the one I just referenced. Section 7 is for 2013 distributions, 32 cents per ton is allocated for projects in local communities. They're listed there on pages 237 and 238. Section 8, Madam Chair, authorizes the Commissioner of IRRRB to issue revenue bonds of $38 million to make grants to school districts for building projects or debt service reduction. Section 9, Madam Chair, is a study for, requiring the Commissioner of Revenue to study the fiscal disparities program on the Iron Range, similar to what was done for the Metropolitan Fiscal Disparities program in the last couple of years.
Questions on Article 10? Somebody's got their thing buzzing again. Article 11, public finance article.
Madam Chair, sections 1, 2, 3, and 4 are the start of the Senate Bill 1533, the public finance bill that that Senator Rust carried. The three provisions that have been included in the public finance in the past, and I don't recall if at what point they were removed from your bill, but I'll highlight here that there is no section related to energy improvements, and the two provisions related to the useful life of software are not included here.
Okay.
Then Section 5 is from Senate Bill 1616, expanding the authority of the Dakota County Community Development Agency. Section 6 is another public finance provision that was heard in committee last week. Section 7 is from Senator Dietzick's Senate file regarding carry forward, Senate file 156, as well as Section 8, Section 9. And then Section 10 is another public finance provision from Senator Rust's bill, as well as Section 11 and 12. Then on page 249, Section 13 is a Senator her bill extending the bonding authority to 2024 for the City of St. Paul. There's no corresponding increase in the principal amount allowed here. Then Section 14 is from Senator Dietzick's bill, Senate File 156. Section 15 is a new provision to allow the Waubun School District the authority to use a lease purchase agreement as part of their matching grant, as part of their match to receive a grant from the Department of Human Services to expand their building. And that is new to this bill here.
Any questions on Article 11? Seeing none, Article 12.
Madam Chair, Article 12 starts on page 251, and it relates to the conversion of the homestead market value credit to an exclusion. When that was done, there were a large number of provisions that reference either estimated market value or taxable market value that needed to be updated, and this is a provision that's been carried in the committee before that clarifies and updates the definitions of taxable market value and estimated market value for there's 112 sections that are where it goes in and makes adjustments. I won't go through them in detail.
No. And members, the that article was also passed to the floor in a separate bill. It's highly technical. Period. So let's move on to
Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Were any of these provisions in last year's vetoed bill also?
I think so. They're really technical.
And they're entirely technical, Madam Chair and Senator Skoy.
And Madam Chair, as long as I mentioned that, there are a number of provisions in this bill that were part of last year's vetoed bill that we had on the floor earlier this year that I removed in our discussions with the House, but they're back in this bill again.
Article 13, just a general comment on that, if you will.
Madam Chair and members, Article 13 is the technical provisions, technical and policy provisions from the department. These were carried in Senator Dietzick and Eaton's bills and heard before this committee earlier this session, and there are no
Article,
changes.
Yeah, and Article 13 is a combination of the policy and the technical bill, correct?
Madam Chair, yes, that's correct.
Okay, and so then Article 14.
Madam Chair, the same in Article 14. This is a combination of the department policy and technical provisions pertaining to sales and use and special taxes heard before in this committee this session.
Okay, Article 15 begins on page 332.
Madam Chair and members, Section 15 is the Department Property and Minerals article combined from the policy and technical provisions, and I can certainly ask their questions if there are any, but there are no changes from when it was heard in committee. And then Article 16 is the miscellaneous article, and there are, again, no changes from the policy bill that was heard.
Okay, so starting with Article 12 to the end, these are either technical changes that we've seen before or non-controversial, technical, and policy changes from as recommended by the department, and they were subject to review not by Senator Dietzick, Senator Eaton, and Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair.
And that, let me just make sure we mark that. So that those begin on Article 12 starts with page 251. So the last over 100 pages of the bill is technical in nature and or non-controversial. Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, we were asked a question about the cities that were impacted by that border city provision.
Senator Skoy.
I was right. It's Breckenridge, Dilworth, East Grand Forks, and Moorhead.
Okay. Any general discussion at this point? Senator Skoy, we did get some property tax run. Did you want to review that at this point? Or most of the many of the provisions are not new to the body or to the public. Did you what's your preference for the 25 minutes we have left?
Madam Senator Chair, Scott. I would remind the pages that if they would bring the handouts to the table first so that the author of the bill has an opportunity
yes.
to see them, that would be helpful. I just got them in.
Right.
Madam Chair, I think that we should open it up for questions from members and see what kind of time.
Okay. Are there now additional questions or comments for members and from members? And let's stick with that and so that the sections are clarified with regard to anyone wanting to offer an amendment tomorrow. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, I'd like some clarification on what we've done with the integration levy and the compensatory revenue for
Senator,
education.
Senator Eaton, I'll be offering an amendment tomorrow that that puts the integration levy in the tax bill.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
I don't believe there would be any reference to compensatory, though. It's just the integration levy that's in that will be coming and carried in the tax bill. And the reason, well, there are many reasons, but one reason is that the E-12 bill had a zero levy target, and so that it would have been a violation of their target to put it in that bill. So we're putting it in this one. Senator Skoy, further comment?
And, Madam Chair, compensatory is solely in the jurisdiction of the E-12 committee. It's an aid.
Further questions about the whole bill now? Senator Ortman.
Well, Madam Chair, I'd like to go back to Article 5, if we could, which was the income tax article. I'm wondering about lines 112.22 to 112.24. And I know that that's current law. I'm just wondering if counsel can explain for us how that operates.
And could you just specify what does that deal with? And give me the page number again, please.
I believe it's a marriage penalty, Madam Chair, but I just want to make sure that I'm reading it correctly.
What page in the bill?
I'm sorry, 112.22 to 112.24.
I believe it is an interaction. Senator Skoy mentioned that in passing, but let's have further clarification. Members on page 112, the interaction of the income tax rates with the marriage, the so-called marriage penalty, or at least that's how most of us understand it. Ms. Pollack or Ms. McQuay, either.
Madam Chair and Senator Ortman, the language on 112.22 through 112.24 states that married individuals filing separately must compute their threshold at half of the amounts filing of married individuals filing jointly. So that would have the effect of the thresholds for married individuals filing separately having different thresholds than single individuals.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Ortman?
So if I just applied that to the 9.4% rate, a married person would pay on half or $70,000 in income versus a single person who would pay the 9.4% rate on income over $79,000. I just want to make sure that I've understood that. I've never prepared our tax return without having been married, so I just want to make sure, and Ray does it all. So is that how that works, and does it apply to all the different rates, too? So there's a penalty at each different rate?
Senator Ortman, I think any time that rate is changed one way or the other, there's going to be an impact. And we had looked at, and I think you had offered amendments with the federal conformity before of mitigating the impact of the so-called marriage penalty, and it was in the tens of millions of dollars to be able to fully do that. From my own personal point of view, that will certainly be a continuing goal to address that issue, but it is not done in this bill. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Orman, I suppose there might be an example where there would be exactly two equal income earners in one family, but many times one spouse earns more than the other, and the other one learns less, so it's hard to make the comparison that I think you're trying to make.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ortman.
I do see it as a penalty. I guess the next question is, there's no federal conformity in this bill, Senator Skoy or Senator Rust?
Senator Ortman, the federal conformity that we passed earlier in the year is not present in this bill, but I think it's reflected in the spreadsheet in terms of the governor's proposal. But and those conformity items were for the most part good for the year 2013.
Madam Chair, to that point, Senator, we didn't have a hearing on the governor's proposal. So I'm wondering, what did the governor propose for federal conformity that is not included in this bill today?
Senator Skoy, you want to comment further on that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're not including any of the governor's proposal in this bill.
Well, maybe you didn't hear me, Mr. Senator Chair Orton. And Senator Skoy, Madam Chair. I'm trying to figure out what was in the governor's proposal that is not included in this bill. If we're going to take up this bill tomorrow and we're going to consider amendments, I'd like to know what the governor has proposed in terms of federal conformity and what he's funded in his proposed budget.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Ortman, I think the governor's proposal has been public for months.
Mr. Chair, can our counsel or fiscal analyst, someone, just briefly describe what was in the governor's federal conformity proposal for $41 million and 2016-17 and $28 million in 2014-15.
Madam Chair,
Ms. McQuaid.
Madam Chair and committee members, the governor's changes for federal conformity on the spreadsheet are reflected on page 1, line 29, and I believe that's what Senator Ortman is referring to, the $28 million and the $41 million. The largest chunk of that the governor did propose is the increase for the working family credit, and that's at a cost of $17 million each year. And then there was a series of other provisions that were grouped together, and as it was explained to me, to help to assist businesses with for the purposes of not keeping to a federal books and then a state book. So they're small provisions that would have, and I can go through them if that's the chair's wish.
I apologize to Senator Ortman. I didn't understand actually what you were asking. So, erase my confused response, Senator Skoy.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Ortman. I know that the House bill hasn't passed off the floor yet, but my understanding is they are carrying conformity provisions in their bill. With the limited resources that we had in this bill, we weren't able to accomplish that goal. I'll be interested in seeing how they propose to pay for those, and I'll be interested in having discussions as we move to conference committee to see if we can achieve any of these federal conformity objectives.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Not to be too argumentative, but I would argue that $80 million more for LGA and $40 million for county program aid doesn't show any kind of limitation on resources at all, but we're not going to do federal conformity and we're going to continue the marriage penalty. I disagree with the whole premise of the bill. I think it's a huge imposition on middle-class taxpayers. But nonetheless, I would request from our counsel or fiscal analyst the specific provisions that were in the governor's federal conformity proposal so that we could at least consider them for an amendment tomorrow.
Senator Ortman, I believe all we will need to do is just provide the revenue estimate, because in that revenue estimate, I believe all the federal conformity provisions were listed. So I think that's available, is it not, from earlier on? Ms. McQuay?
Madam Chair and members, the Department of Revenue posts that on their homepage and or on their webpage. And I would also point out that the governor just has a subset of the federal conformity provisions that were in front of the legislature this year, and that there is a much larger grouping of them. For example, the marriage penalty credit that was our conformity provision that is available if the legislature wants to conform to that provision, but it was not offered as a recommendation by the governor.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you. And Senator Harbin, I'm disappointed that you don't support the elimination of the capital equipment sales tax, cumbersome process that our businesses have to go through. I'm disappointed that you don't support the elimination of sales tax on cities and counties. I think there's significant property tax relief in here. I'm disappointed you don't support the property tax relief.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Scoy, I do. In fact, the capital equipment exemption was included in the bill that I worked on last year and the governor vetoed. I don't believe you voted for that bill. It didn't mean that you didn't support it. It just meant that when the bill was put together as an omnibus package, you didn't support it. And that's why I'm disappointed in this bill as an overall package. It's truly disappointing and a huge imposition on middle-class taxpayers.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Scoy.
Senator Ortman, would that be because we're actually paying for those provisions?
Senator Ortman.
Do you want a response? I thought that was truly rhetorical. If you raise $3 billion in taxes, you can pay for a lot more government.
I thought his voice went up at the end, so I did not think it was rhetorical.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments?
Madam Chair?
Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, I wonder if our staff could briefly go over Article 6 dealing with estate taxes.
Sure.
I have... And what we have done, basically, in that article. I have a lot of people asking me about estate taxes, and could we just maybe
this is the work of Senator Coonan, but yes.
It's a short article, so...
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Ms. Pollack?
Madam Chair and Senator Senjum.
And we had an extensive...
It's on page 136.
Yes, in the Reform Division early on, we had an extensive hearing that also just to... It's not anything new, is what I want to point out. Extensive hearing on Senator Coonan's bill and Senator Gazelka's and report from the Department of Revenue on the changes that had occurred in the federal level on the fiscal cliff bill with regard to estate taxes. And this provision here is at least one response, or a partial response. To that, Senator Ms. Pollack, do you want to explain further the estate tax article, which members is Article 6?
Madam Chair and members, Article 6, the provisions in Article 6 are provisions that were adopted in 2011 to create an exclusion for qualifying small business property and qualifying farm property. And there were some unintended consequences, I think, from that enactment of that legislation that made it caused a lot of questions by estate planners, and the department sought some clarification last year in the provisions that were adopted in 2011. So these provisions in Article 6 are very similar, if not identical, to the provisions that the department suggested last year and that Senator Ortman had in the omnibus bill last year that was vetoed. One item that I would note on page 136, line 18, it clarifies that a family member also includes a trust whose beneficiaries are family members. The language was not clear on that before, and that was, as I understand, a significant issue for estate planners and the departments in administering the exclusions. And Madam Chair and Senator Senjum, if you have specific questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Madam Chair and
Senator Senjum.
Ms. Pollack, and I'm not remembering the numbers. Was the exclusion at 4 or 5 million on those?
Madam Chair, Senator Sinjin, it's 4 million total. So any combination of the qualified small business or qualified farm property up to 4 million exclusion.
Okay.
Senator Sinjin?
I think I'm fine.
Madam Chair,
if I could get a lot of questions on that.
Sure. Senator Skoy, then Senator Gazelka. Senator Skoy.
Thank you. And Senator Sinjin, we had a lot of discussion with some of the farm groups about this, and this is the language that they would like to have in place. We thought it was unusual that they were requesting language that actually raised some revenue because they would be then paying it, but it's the simplification of the process for them that they're really after, and so we included this provision in for them.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My concern is it really went opposite of where I was going. I do appreciate that trusts are included in the individual category, but it raises $23.8 million more in a biennium in taxes from estates. And, I had one client, friend up in my area that is near retirement age, and he probably DFL, frankly. But he said, I can handle
our friend. That's an okay thing to be.
Why? I don't know. I mean, he's successful. But anyway, Madam Chair, with all respect.
I'm going to remember that.
But it was interesting. His comment was to me, he said, I can handle the income taxes that I'm paying. This was before this bill. He said, but I'm, I'm getting ready to retire, and you got to do something about those estate taxes. Otherwise, why should I stay in Minnesota? Because I'm paying all the way through, and then you're going to take it at the end. And so I am very concerned about this entire bill related to people like him, where we didn't do anything about the estate taxes. We actually went up, and we're increasing the income tax. And, there eventually is going to be the straw that broke the camel's back where I'm concerned about an exodus of businesses that quietly leave Minnesota. They're not going to make waves. They're just going to expand and do things elsewhere. And I'm just very concerned about that, Madam Chair.
Well, Senator Gazelka, Senator Skoy, and I have looked extensively at the estate tax provision because every single special interest, every single stakeholder group, we found no objection to moving toward the provision that's in there, and we quite frankly were very surprised, and we are continuing to ask the department to look at that provision to make sure that the estimate is indeed an accurate one, because it is confounding, quite frankly. I think Senator Skoy would agree, but Senator Skoy?
Madam Chair and Senator Gazelka, I was puzzled by it. It truly is their request. I've asked about it more than once. We did try to include in the bill, and up until the very end, I was carrying the decoupling and the spousal transfer. I can't remember what that's called exactly, but we were trying to eliminate that rate bubble and let portability and spousal benefits occur. It had a larger fiscal impact than we were able to accommodate, but my intention is to continue to work on that.
With you. Thank you.
Senator Skoy, would you like to announce a schedule then for the rest of the week in dealing with a with the omnibus bill?
Madam Chair, I believe that we will be marking up the bill tomorrow and passing it out of committee to the floor of the Senate. There is some uncertainty as to when it's going to be heard on the Senate floor, I understand, so I wouldn't be able to announce that time, but tomorrow we'll mark up and vote the bill tomorrow morning. Just one other thing for clarification. This bill raises $1.863 billion in revenue, not the three that Senator Ortman.
Can you repeat that number, Madam Chair, Senator Skoy?
It's on line 197 of your spreadsheet.
Thank you, Senator Skoy. I will point out that the bill is the delete all for Senate File 552 is now posted online. Ms. McQuaid will be putting the spreadsheets on later, and the summary will be posted online as well once it is available. There being no further business before the committee today, we stand adjourned.
Well, I better go.